was a highwayman. Along the coach roads I did ride, with sword and pistol by my side. Many a young maid lost her baubles to my trade. Many a soldier shed his lifeblood on my blade.
And welcome back after a small hiatus. Really, any over.
Over, far, yes, to say that. Brief, hey lady.
Hey, but brief, that's all I come flying in to Hey Kids Comics. I am Andrew Farber.
Was it in Voigen, the suburb of Muggerville?
It is. You can go to get Schmarin's Morgan. And with me, as always, is my producer and co-host and
Schmarnoigan.
And a bon vivant, the Jedi, Cole Houston.
Good evening from the outskirts of Miss Morgan.
I like the fact that it changes every single time.
Yeah, it does. That's why it's impossible to find.
It really, Google
it's
Maps.
It's like Brigadoon, except that it's always there. It's just no one knows what it's called.
It is the Pirate Island of and Financial District of Muggerville. I don't know why we've decided to go international for no reason tonight, but we have. So yeah. There you go.
So au revoir.
We took a brief hiatus. We had AllCon last week. We've had a lot of stuff.
Actually, we had AllCon 2 weeks ago, too.
Was it a full 2 weeks ago now?
It was a full 2 weeks ago, as you listen to this. We have lost all sense of time, space.
Yeah.
Chewing gum. All of our senses are gone now.
Euclidean geometry. Everything has escaped us. There's nothing left.
I really am still in a daze. But,
I think I'm still in AllCon. I think that
I wish I was, because I did not want to leave.
I walked into an angle that didn't exist in somewhere in a peacock room, and then I'm still there. But a brief hiatus.
It's like Gem World or something. You know?
It is. It's like the world that Crystar lived on.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's even worse than Gem World.
Listen, I've been fighting molten men like it was 1989.
I just feel like, you know, I would be in the Crystar world. I would almost certainly wind up being Feldspar.
You would totally.
I would have, like, the lava legs and the crystal torso and head.
Would be the best of both worlds.
Yeah, I would. And it would be, like, really freakish around my midriff.
Which, by the way, I should announce this now. Next year, it's already in the works. We've already signed. Signed with Muggerville Records.
Yes, indeed.
I can't even finish. Cole's going
our new band?
Cole's going to release a smooth jazz album.
Yeah.
Called Really Strange Around My Midriff.
Yeah.
It's going to be fantastic.
We've got some old favorites on there, but it's mostly new material.
It is. It's Quartz Gets In Your Eyes is on there.
Yeah. There's a dance mix.
There is.
Didn't realize you could dance to smooth jazz, but we found a way.
Oddly enough, Baha Men's Who Let the Dogs Out's on that album. I don't know how that works.
And it's not even one of my own songs. They apparently had a sale.
They got just the
showed
rights
up to put it on the red. It was like a one day sale. Nobody knew about it. We just kind of stumbled on it. We was like, hey, we'll take it.
I mean, Muggerville's Nun Records. It's like Sun Records, but N-O-N-E. They really have booked no one. They've put out no albums that you would have ever heard. They had no impact on the music industry. Oddly enough,
they welcome piracy.
They pray for it.
They stand out as the only publisher actively welcoming piracy.
They're begging for it. Literally begging for it.
Yeah, because the label, their logo is literally the come and take it flag.
Right.
Except they mean it. I mean, it's not ironic or, you know, we dare you or anything. No, please. Please take it.
Speaking of come and take it, that is an awful segue. Tonight's episode, somehow
it works for this. You'll find out.
We are on issue 128. We have made it 128 issues into Hey Kids Comics, which is a milestone in and of itself. But we are doing issue 6 in our special Hey Kids Comics team up, where we discuss superhero teams. And tonight's was, I believe, was a collaboration. I don't think either of us came to this, like the comic itself.
It's like trying to find Schmadenhagen there just outside of Muggerville.
Schmargenhagen? Where?
That one.
Yeah, that one too? One. Okay, yeah.
Just sort of arrived together, and neither of you know where you're going, and there you are. And this was certainly very much the kind of case.
It is in the path of the Buckaroo Banzai experience, because it doesn't matter where you are.
Yeah, it's a bit like driving through the eighth dimension.
And by the way, Nun Records just signed the eighth dimension.
Did they? Yeah. I'm so glad, because they're a great garage band. It's a garage band. It's like a garage grunge band.
I thought there was an accent at the end of that E. I thought it was like garangy. I didn't know.
They dropped that.
Oh, they dropped. Okay. They reinvented. Okay. But tonight we're talking about the Defenders.
Yes, that's what we're
talking about. That's what we're getting to, the Defenders. And
this was a long and circuitous path to something that you're like, oh, the Defenders. In case somehow you clicked on this audio without looking at the title.
Right.
It says, the Defenders.
And in a good segue, speaking of a long circuitous path, the Defenders has had a very long and very circuitous path to where it has ended up now.
I think of all of the storied histories we've explored on this show, be it, you know, taking an in-depth look at a superhero team or just talking out our asses about any number of other aspects of comics, this team represents the most storied, most unusual, most nigh-impossible collection of characters.
And it's one of those where you've got to wonder. Okay, so like when it started, it started as a weirdo superhero team from like the, you know, like the 70s type idea of superhero teams, where let's just throw a bunch of heroes together and make a, you know, kind of a, and I think it was like a Marvel premiere or a Marvel feature that started everything, really, because so many things did in the 70s start as a Marvel feature.
A lot of the titles, you know, it's often hard to find some old books. If you have a meticulous comic shop owner who's a stickler for for specifics, or they're just pedantic, because a lot of times, you know, some of your favorite titles weren't that title initially. They were Marvel Premiere, or Marvel Feature, or Marvel Thing, or Marvel Time Killer.
Marvel, we just hired some new guys.
Yeah.
I kind of think what happened, yeah.
My favorite book is Marvel Title. It's called Marvel Title. And it's sort of like, you know, Marvel Title, the Hulk Jr.
Hulk Jr.
Hulk Jr. lasted an issue.
Hulk Jr. It was better than the other Marvel Title premiere issue, which was Hulk Sr. That was...
Hulk Sr. was even... I think they thought perhaps we just went too young.
Yeah, we're gonna age this up some. We're gonna different.
And what was odd is those were back to back issues of Marvel Title. I give it a chance to do something. But we're not here to talk about Marvel Title. As much as we love that title.
No, we're here to talk about the Defenders, which
Avdenders,
the Addendumers, which would be a good title for the Defenders book, the Addendumers.
I want to point out that we now own the
Addendumers.
Yeah, so that's ours now.
It's the next book in the Muggerville saga, because we have the Muggerville 5, which is sort of like our Avengers, and then we have the Addendumers. Which is what essentially the Defenders was, which was, okay, the Avengers is super popular. X-Men, super popular. We need another superhero book. What are we going to do? Well, all right.
And what words aren't in use yet?
Right. What?
A lot of times it really comes down to what words are left, and that it becomes increasingly difficult as the decades wear on. That's why our fallback is obviously the Addendumers.
Right.
Because no one's going to touch that. But, you know, it's getting harder and harder to get a team name going.
I don't know how they do it now. Like, well, I do know how they do it now, because they do the Secret Defenders, or
the Raspberry Defenders.
Right, the Fiesta Taco Defenders. And
I think Who am I thinking of? Prince? Yeah, Prince sang about that.
Raspberry. He did.
Raspberry Defenders.
It's the kind you can actually buy at a secondhand store.
Yeah, because I think Squirrel Girl was in that group.
You're thinking of Robert Palmer's Simply Irresistible Squirrel Girl video, where it's just a bunch of Squirrel Girls in like red lipstick and little tight black dresses.
That's just nuts.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you, Cole. So the Defenders, can we talk for a second about the Defenders? See, this is what happens.
I've heard tell of them.
This is what happens after a convention when Cole and I decided to start recording again. I guarantee you every issue of Hey Kids Comics you go back and listen to after a convention that Cole and I have done together is exactly like this. It makes no sense.
We just jump in. We're trying to get our footing again. It's like going back to the first issue all over.
It is. So what they did was they took three characters that were not involved in any title at the time but had a lot of name recognition. They took Doctor Strange, they took Submariner, and they took the Hulk and put them together.
And these were all title name characters who had or still had their own books.
Mm-hmm. And they put them together in a Marvel menage a trois, and it was really, really popular.
In Spain and Mexico, I was looking for some imagery, and apparently they were known as Los Defensores.
Oh, really? Speaking of international. But they
stole that name out from under me.
It was super popular, so then they decided, this is super popular. Let's actually put them together as a group called the Defenders. And then we're going to slap some other people in here, like, we need a lady, because every group needs a lady. So we're going to give them Valkyrie, which I don't think it was the initial, the origin of the Valkyrie happened in the Defenders. I might be wrong, but it was definitely the first real recognition as a standalone character the Valkyrie had.
Yeah, I think that it really brought the character of her own.
Right.
In a way that, she'd been a supporting character in Thor. And, what's funny is a lot of the Defenders, after your core initial group, after your startup.
Right.
A lot of your Defenders were characters who were almost sort of given a new lease on life. They got to be brought to the forefront. I think you put it best when we were talking about it before the show, is it was the Bush League.
Yeah. It was the Bush League, not only for the characters that you wanted to see if they would gain traction, because the thing about the Defenders was it was a popular comic book. People bought it and read it. But also for new creators that Marvel brought in to put them on there and see how they do.
Exactly. And, plus it was sort of like that was the time when Hulk was telling, I think, Clea, Doctor Strange's companion, there's no crying in superheroing.
The Defenders was weird, dude. Like, I actually, did that actually happen? Because it wouldn't surprise me if it actually happened.
It should have happened, but no, that was just me invoking a League of Their Own.
Because what would happen inevitably, and because we were also talking about the fact that the Defenders from kind of Jump Street were the supernatural superhero team, which was a really weird concept for the characters that they chose to be in it. It made sense a little later, but from the beginning, not so much. Because essentially, Doctor Strange put together an A-team to go take out Dormammu's Nameless One. And their whatever the little the undying
The mindless ones.
Yeah. And
just sort of run around and shoot Cyclops beams and
out of their little weird eyes.
And they have no idea what they're doing because they're
mindless. So it started out like that. But they handled the supernatural, so inevitably, because I bought the, I wasn't a huge Defenders fan, but they had the Defenders Essentials, Marvel Defenders for like $4 at a convention at some point. So I picked it up and I read it, and inevitably it like starts out like, oh, Hulk's gonna eat all the food in the fridge, and then we're entering the astral plane. It's like, whoa, what happened? So
you don't want to enter the astral plane on an empty stomach, I'll tell you that right now.
So right, well, it really it's like swimming. Yeah. After not, you got to wait.
Well, that's just a wives' tale. it turns out that's just a wives' tale.
Turns out that's not. Don't
just
listen.
Jump right on in. It's not gonna. No.
Don't listen to me for medical advice. Listen, if you have a wart, cut a potato in half.
That's right. Rub it on there.
Rub it on there. But the Avengers handled You know, they were the big leagues. They handled the extraterrestrial events. While they were out instigating a war between the Kree and the Skrull, the Defenders were off in the astral plane fighting Dormammu and meeting Howard the Duck and going on all kinds of awesome 70s like incense and peppermints, Maui Wowie, completely, you know,
yeah,
like weeded up adventures, which is completely awesome.
They just jumped into the hairy middle of things that nobody else got to do.
Right, which is super cool. Like, and that's the thing about bringing in young, new creators is, unless you're Alan Moore, you're not entrenched into that world yet, so you're going to have all these crazy, weird ideas to put out there. You're going to introduce all kinds of crazy, bizarre things and you know, go nuts with it. So
yeah, I mean, they were fighting the likes of, like, Nebulon, who had, like, his shirt was the entire universe or something. I'm not sure what it was. But, you know, they're very either mystical or extraterrestrial characters that were outside of what you normally saw. You saw a lot of the Korean Skrull. They became sort of like the go-to.
Right.
But it did give you a place outside of Doctor Strange's own title to explore some of the bizarre possibilities that were out there.
Absolutely. I've got to ask this because we always do. Who was your favorite Defender? Like, because there were so many. I mean, we could go through a litany of all of the members of the Defenders if we so desired to. And there are really bizarre Defenders. Like every Defender was just the weirdest. Like everybody from Yellow Jacket was at one point a Defender.
I'd have to say it's a hard one to pin down because I love so many of the characters that were cycled through there.
Right.
But, you know, when we were talking about it earlier today, I zeroed in on Gargoyle because he was one of those characters that, not, you know, got the short shrift. You rarely got to see him, but he got to be a Defender. And this guy was the mayor of a town, for God's sake.
It's true. That's true. He was.
How many successful mayoral candidates... How many politicians get to go into superheroing and, you know, wearing some sort of weird-looking costume that was a reject from Walt Disney's Robin Hood with the crenulations around the boot, tops of the boots and around the neck piece there?
See, for me, it's always been, and it's always been Nighthawk for me because he was the Batman.
Yeah, I mean, essentially analog. He was Batman.
But he was a really crappy Batman.
Yeah.
Because...
And oddly enough, what I said earlier about, you know, politicians never getting to do this, he was, if I'm not mistaken, President of the United States.
Gargoyle?
No, Nighthawk. I believe in his world he was at one time President of the United States. He was from the same world as Hyperion, the Squadron Supreme, essentially.
Oh, okay. That's bizarre, but all right.
Yeah, I remember reading that in like the Marvel Universe guidebook. I'm sorry, it's a little difficult for me to... The President of the United States can't sneak out at night like Bruce Wayne. Like, oh, you know, see you later, everybody. I need to go fight crime.
Right.
Very close to the White House. Because I got like a 7 a.m. We're going to talk to the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Got a full day. Got to meet with some foreign nationals. But tonight, I want to go beat the living crap out of that guy who's been knocking for 7-Elevens in the bi-state area.
Right? It's just... It's...
I don't know which two states are involved, but that guy was getting on everybody's nerves. I'd have to step in and...
And handle business. Like
that's right. Like a president ought to.
But... So for me, that's always been anybody who's the Batman analog, and the thing about that is, and we've talked about it with Superman. We need to do a Batman show with all of the Batman ripoffs because we've done a Superman one. But Marvel had more than DC, and DC has Batman.
You've thrown down the gauntlet, by the way. We are going to have a Hayes Kids Comics number, whatever it turns out to be called. We're Batman.
We're Batman. Fourth meal.
That's true. Or, yeah, we'll just simply call it Ford's Meal.
Ford's Meal. But they have, I mean, the list of Batman ripoffs in the Marvel Universe, I mean, yeah, like, the obvious ones for me, which is, like, Moon Knight, you know, and then you've got, like, Nighthawk, and it, yeah. Just stop it. Just holster the Batman. It doesn't need to happen. And he was a really bad one, too. Like, he wasn't a good Batman ripoff. He just had money and wanted to pal around with Namor, so that's what he did. Like yeah, he did some stuff, and he had some claws and like a retractable like claw tether hook thing. And, but
yeah, he didn't bring the tech to that level that
Batman. He wasn't as fleshed out, obviously, yeah. as Batman was. So what? Who's your least favorite of the Defenders?
Apparently, he did it one time in the. Alternate universe version from the Squadron Supreme, they did go apparently up against the Serpent Cartel.
The Serpent Cartel, is that like the Serpent Society, but not as cool?
But different.
But different.
Yeah. The Serpent Cartel. But apparently they were going after the same kind of Serpent Crown action. I don't know, like Devil Slayer? Just not somebody I really flock to. I'm not breaking down the doors to get a Devil Slayer.
You're not attached to Devil Slayer, apparently? Not
as much, no.
Not in your wheelhouse. I mean, the Defenders had a lot of really cool people. They had Power Man and Iron Fist, and, you know, good on them for bringing people out of the, you know, they've had a roster of 43 people on the Defenders at one point or another, which isn't Avengers caliber, but still...
It's awful good, because, I mean, the Fantastic Four only had, like, 30.
And I don't know why I'm not more of a fan of the Defenders, because, like, all of my favorite Marvel characters have been a Defender at some point or another, almost.
You've got, yeah, like, I mean, even with Jessica Jones...
Jessica Jones, you had Black Knight was a Defender at one point.
Angel was a Defender. Iceman...
I believe it needs to be noted that at some point in the Defenders circuit, one of the show's favorite characters was a Defender, and that was Dr. Druid.
Oh, that's right.
Dr. Druid.
I'm still going to say Devil Slayer is still below Dr. Druid for me.
Well, I think it would have to be.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, Stingray...
Jack of Hearts was a member, if I'm not mistaken.
Jack of Hearts was a member with his weirdo...
Was it Whirlwind, who premiered in Rom the Space Knight? Whirlwind. May have been a... I believe that was the character's name. Was he a Defender at one point?
I think everybody was a Defender at some point.
Yeah, that's probably true. But
the Defenders, I mean, the thing about the Defenders was, almost like the Avengers, nobody's ever been able to let go of the Defenders. Like, the Defenders started in the 70s. It's still going. There was some Defenders. There were some new Defenders. The Defenders returned. I had the Secret Defenders, which was the most 90s book ever, by the way, because it featured Wolverine, Darkhawk, Spider-Woman, Spider-Man, Hulk, Ghost Rider. Like, good if you could Lord. Encapsulate the 90s and throw it into a comic book, it would have been the Defenders. Yeah, the one that I really liked was the last Defenders book was Keith Geffen and Mateus. Geffen and Mateus came back to do a Defenders book. And if you don't know who they are, we've talked about them before. They are the team that wrote JLA for a long time. They kind of invented Booster Gold and the Blue Beetle incarnations that we've come to know and love in the form that we know and love them as, like, the buddy cop film. they made this book the most ridiculous thing, because the idea was that, and keep in mind, this is 2005, so it had been 35 years. Doctor Strange wanted to get the band back together for one last ride. and so he went after... It was Hulk, Strange, Namor, and the Silver Surfer. Because how much more powerful do you need a team to be when Namor is your weak link?
Yeah.
Like, what are you doing? And they went after Dormammu. And it was the funniest damn book
I think read. I remember that. I remember reading that.
Because it was like...
Wow.
It was like the Golden Girls. if the Golden Girls was Silver Surfer, Doctor Strange. And they just hacked at each other the entire time, and it was so, so funny. If you get a chance, of all the Defenders books I've ever read, that's the one.
I remember reading that, because there was like a... Dormammu and Umar were just like at each other's throats, the brother and sister,
right?
If I recall. Yeah,
right, no, that's just... true, yeah. No, you're absolutely right. You know, and kind of the Hulk plays the straight man through the whole thing, and Doctor Strange is kind of Frasier-y, you know, like like he's definitely aloof and effete during the thing, and Silver Surfer is kind of, you know, almost Draxian in his humor, like he's not really getting anything, but he's still trying to throw it out there. It was really funny. Anything that Giffen and DeMatteis do is worth reading. Period. But this was a really
I remember game. That. I don't think I was able to follow it all the way through, but I do remember that being a hell of a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
And Torpedo, by the way, was the character I was thinking of, not Whirlwind, who was an Avengers villain. Torpedo is the guy that had like the little jet engines on his boots and his gloves and the...
Oh yes.
He actually had his premiere in the pages of Rom the Space Knight.
God bless Rom.
Who also teamed up with Power Man and Iron Fist at one point.
Well, that's the thing. These characters are not your, you know, they aren't your A-listers, for the most part. I mean, you do have your Silver Surfer. But at the time this was coming out, Silver Surfer wasn't really an A-list character.
I mean, a lot of these guys faded into obscurity, almost.
Hulk was the draw. Hulk was the draw for this book. And much like, you know, any of the... Because we were talking about this before the show. I don't know whether it's dumb luck on the part of the Hulk, or, you know, he's just a complete dichotomy. Whenever somebody's trying to start a superhero team, Hulk just happens to be there. He happens to be in the mix. So
whether by accident or design, a superhero team will inevitably include the Hulk.
And then he just kind of wanders off into the desert leaves it to somebody else to handle.
Well, as we were talking about, you know, the two things that the Hulk wants most in life is solitude and smashing.
It's really dichotomous.
Which in itself is, it's a very difficult bipolar kind of existence, but...
And like you were saying, if you could just get him, like a Walkman with the sounds of smashing, Paul Simon's The Sounds of Smashing playing, he would never mess with anybody. He would just hang out in the desert.
He'd just find a place on the beach or in the desert.
And hang out and smash things. It would be great for him. I think it would be very therapeutic if he could do that. What point do the Defenders serve in the Marvel Universe now and before? I guess is a question that I really want to explore. You know, we've talked about the fact that they take on the supernatural pretty regularly, which is something that, you know, like you said, the Justice League Dark do. But they really. It's an exploration in the minor character. I feel like, you know.
Yeah, because it takes characters, and in a way, I guess Justice League Dark does as well, because a lot of characters that weren't necessarily seeing the light of day were involved there. But, you know, you're getting those characters who aren't getting a lot of coverage, like Valkyrie, and bringing them to the forefront. But, you know, because you had characters like Falcon, who's like an on again, off again, somebody that people conjure up.
Right.
And, Daredevil was a member, I think we may have mentioned.
The membership, if you want to know the members of the Defenders, it's pretty nuts. I mean, you had some lower luminaries that are starting to get some recognition now, like White Tiger. But you're right, Torpedo was in there, Stingray was in there.
Captain Marvel, Hercules.
Oh, Hercules was a classic member of the Defenders, absolutely. Paladin was
in
there.
Paladin and Wonder Man, I think, may have briefly.
Uh-huh. Like, they took such an amazing roster of characters and were able to explore dynamic with them that they might not have been able to.
And I think also by using that approach, by not using Avengers level, or Avenger, you know, the first people on the Rolodex when the Avengers needed a new member or two.
Right.
What they did was open the door to doing a lot of the stories that wouldn't get done in the Avengers. You know, one of the things you were mentioning from your research was that it allowed them to have these characters be a little more snarky, or a little more, they could be a little more playful with right. some of the approaches, because the Avengers were, you know, all super serial about it. I'm super serial.
yeah, you can't mess with the pathos that exists yeah. in the Avengers. But with this, you could explore the humor that is the Hulk, or mm-hmm. you know, or the romantic side of Doctor Strange, or, because let's not forget, Hellcat was a member of Patsy Walker was a member of the Defenders at yeah. some point. So,
and you know, you could also do a lot of things like bring in the Squadron Supreme.
Right. Right.
You know, your alternate universe ripoff of the Justice League. You could do things like bring in the original Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yes.
Like the awkward Charlie 27 and the Crystalline Martinex.
Charlie, yeah. Like the stout and the weird, the Yondu with the fin, and
yeah.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Like, it's
your father's Yondu, basically.
Your father's Yondu, right. None of this Merle stuff.
Merle Dixon,
which, by the way, still loved that. Still loved yeah. him in that movie. But
Michael
was not
was amazing as Yondu. But it was certainly a very different approach to Yondu, which was brilliant for what the film was.
Right.
I know you couldn't have had the comic Yondu.
No.
In that same kind of way.
No, with the spandex and the big fin would not have worked.
Though
all.
I like the suggestion, and I'm going to go out on a limb and hope that in the sequel. There's something backing this up, is that the little red doodad on his head
yes.
is the approximates a fan lost at some point in his history.
Okay, so you think we're going to find out at some point that...
What I would personally, we'll go a little off topic here though, but what I would personally love to see is...
Off topic.
There's a little, yeah, God knows... there's little suggestions, little hints of the possibility, at least in my mind, that you could explore Yondu as being part of the original Guardians of the Galaxy. And part of what I back that up with is that the actual use of the term Guardians of the Galaxy by Ronan.
Right.
Because there's some implicit history there.
Well, you
that
know,
there was once a Guardians of the Galaxy.
Right,
right. Yondu was a part of, because they obviously know who Yondu is, because what's his dangle there? Jaiman Hansu guy.
What's his dangle?
you know, when he encounters Yondu after he's crashed, he actually calls him out by name, like by his full name, like it's his mom or something.
Right? Like,
Yondu Odonto, you get over here right now!
What did you do? No,
Yondu Damon.
Right.
Yondu, like Keth had the middle name in there. Like
oh, yeah, that's how you know name. It's serious.
Yeah, it's on. It's Spider-Woman, the post-Secret Wars Spider-Woman was a Defender.
Was a member of the Defenders. Like, there's so many members of the Defenders that it's actually kind of shocking when I started to do the research for it. Also, let's not forget that there was a period where... Beast took over as the leader, and when Beast took over the leader, he brought in Iceman and Angel as members of the Defenders.
Yeah, because there's no such thing as nepotism in this.
No, not at all. Not at all.
Is that nepotism? I don't know. But
I mean, this is one of the because what
and of course one of my old personal favorites, because it's just so ironic, is the Son of Satan.
Right. Oh, David Hellstrom.
Ah, yes.
Who I believe weds Hellcat at some point. Does
I believe that is correct. Yes, indeed.
Yeah, yeah. He's a freak. Apparently, I was unaware of this, but Nick Fury becomes a member of the Defenders, because what what is Nick Fury doing at that, you know, like, whatever, yeah. Nick. Oh, Nick Fury.
Obviously not helping hunt for Godzilla. Because that was left solely to Dum Dum back in the day.
Hey, Dum Dum's no slouch. If anybody can hunt the Godzilla.
Well, and he did a damn fine job. They're like literally driving around in a helicarrier all over the nation hunting Godzilla.
And how is it that hard when you're SHIELD to find Godzilla? You can find Baron von Strucker in the Swiss Alps, but you can't find Godzilla, for God's sakes? Come on.
And Strucker's trying to hide. It's not like Godzilla, you know, what's he going to do? Like, duck behind a mountain or something?
Right. He doesn't care.
And hope you don't come in from the east. They'll never see me as long as they don't pull a Maginot line and come in from the other side.
Right. Way to go, Napoleon Godzilla. Yeah. What are we even talking about? I don't even know anymore.
It's called a Great Wall Maneuver. This will keep everyone out as long as they don't.
As long as they don't
do what they did.
As long as they don't do what they did.
I mean, it's not like the hot gates in 300, you know, or only the duplicity of a hunchback, a snaggletooth hunchback.
They have 1,000 helicarriers. Then we'll fight in the shade.
Wow.
Yeah, that's what I said.
That's a great where I story. Went.
I don't even know. But the Defenders kept going. That's one of the really cool things about this book is that, you know, the Defenders have been an ongoing series up until last year, and I think that some of the Secret War stuff that's coming has to do with the Defenders as well. So they have never stopped being what Marvel has referred to as the non-team, because they have never had. I mean, they've had like they've worked out of brownstones. It's like Tommy Lee Jones in The Fugitive. They've worked out of outhouses, in-houses, townhouses,
whorehouses,
whatever, forever. Penthouses, and they show no signs of stopping. So for me, it's really cool.
They've never really had a formal roster. They've never really had a formal structure. You know, they've never had their own mansion. You know, there's not a Defenders mansion or a Defenders, ranch house.
Right. The ranch house.
Or even, there's not even a Defenders apartment. Duplex. I
mean, Defenders duplex.
The addendumers
have a duplex. That's what they have.
Addendumers duplex.
They have a duplex.
Well, that, you know, they have to have some place where the girls can change clothes on one side, the guys can change clothes on
right.
The other. So otherwise, it would just be. It would not be proper.
And it really sucks about that is that not only did they have Nighthawk on their team at one point, but they also had Danny Rand on their team at one point. Like, you've got the low-rent Tony Stark on your team, and what's he doing for you? Nothing? Like, is he just coming and going as he pleases? Like, oh, yeah, I'll take the jet back. You guys catch the bus. Like, what?
How come you get to...
Right.
Because I got the keys.
Yeah, just wait till they let me be in Avengers. I'll sponsor them then, but or Heroes for Hire. I'll sponsor the Heroes for Hire. But you guys, come on, you've got a weird brownstone in I forget what. Where's Doctor Strange's brownstone at? Brooklyn? I don't know where it is. I don't know. I don't know where his thing is, but another interesting thing is coming up, and the reason that this is the talking about the Defenders now is fairly poignant is that coming up next month, actually, not to date the show, but coming up next month, we're getting what Netflix is touting as a Defenders TV show in the works, in the making, with starting with Daredevil. Then leading into, I believe, a.k.a. Jessica Jones. Then I think we're going to get Luke Cage. Then I think we're going to get Iron Fist. And then they're going to have a joint show with all of them together and calling it The Defenders, which is a fanboy dream come true, I think, is the only way you can put that. Like, I couldn't be more excited for what is happening.
Yeah.
So my question to Cole is, if they do this, so we have four characters, you know, I'm getting one of my top four Marvel characters in this mix anyway. I don't care. Like, I'm getting it. The only way this could be better for me is if they're like, oh, look, Mark Spector showed up. Arr, I'm going to kill you. I'm going to rip your nipples off, Warren Ellis style. That's the only way this could get better, because I'm getting Iron Fist in a TV show. I'm getting exactly. Crazy Kung Fu Iron Fist. I mean, how, and I really hope that they do it like awful 70s, like Hong Kong, where they just do all everything in post. They don't do anything on set. Everything's in post. They do it Shaw Brothers style. That would make me the happiest man alive. I know that that's not going to happen, but
no, but still, it'd be awful damn nice.
What storylines? What do you want to see them explore on this show?
That's interesting. I would love to see more opening, you know, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.'s little by little sort of opening a lot of doors to a greater Marvel universe. And that's a great vehicle for that, even though they've sort of said that the, I think there's a lot of people mistaking the DC television universe with the Marvel television universe.
Yeah.
By misinterpreting that someone somewhere said that the Marvel television universe and the cinematic universe, nary the twain shall meet. The fact that there's such synergy between Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and the cinematic universe suggests that that's never been a mandate.
Yeah.
So I think you're going to have great potential for some of these other shows to, and it could be just that the Netflix produced stuff may not mesh. I don't know. But I think there's potential for that to happen. And you can use these shows to open up a greater universe, i.e. The street-level hero
right.
idea, which you're going to need come Civil War. You can't, you know, Civil War is untenable if all you have is the Avengers. Because if you think about it, everything the Marvel Cinematic Universe has done up to this point on the big screen is build toward or give you the Avengers, with the exception of Guardians of the Galaxy.
Right.
You know, that was a vehicle to open up a greater intergalactic universe. Doctor Strange is going to be a vehicle to open up the mystical realms. But you don't have anything but the Avengers.
Right, right.
And until they could finally wrest control of Spider-Man, you weren't going to have any solo street-level heroes. Where does your Civil War erupt if all you have is a schism in the ranks of the Avengers?
Yes. You have
like,
two
these
versus
nine
two.
Guys and these eight guys all hate each other over the fact that less than 20 people have to register for some kind of...
I honestly had not thought about it that way, but you're absolutely correct.
Well, see, the whole conceptually Civil War to me was untenable anyway.
Okay, go on.
Because conceptually it is a gigantic ball of wax that can never, and I don't care how damn many crossovers they did, how many specials they did, you can't tell that story in a miniseries, in a bunch of spinoffs. Because it has a ripple effect that goes beyond anything.
Right.
And, you know, what you get is an abbreviated version of what's too big a story to tell. And I'm honestly of the opinion sometimes I'd rather not hear the story at all if what you're having to do is give me the cliff notes.
And
ultimately that's what's going to happen. And I personally think that Civil War was rushed for Captain America. I know they had a lot of fun with, you know, putting Serpent Society on there. I don't think Serpent Society works for the big screen regardless.
I beg to differ, sir.
I mean, as much as I would love to see, you know, Death Adder and Anaconda, you know, like Rosie O'Donnell playing Anaconda.
Oh, my God. Perfect casting.
I'm telling you
perfect
right now.
Perfect casting.
I would like to see Rosie O'Donnell play either Anaconda for the Marvel Cinematic Universe or Granny
it.
Goodness
yes.
for the... Granny Goodness. That's my Granny Goodness voice, by the way. It's Granny Goodness.
It's Granny Goodness.
For some reason, I think Granny Goodness should sound a bit like that woman that Jonathan Winters did, only my version.
I'm changing my... I'm posthumously changing my vote to Jonathan Winters to either play Granny Goodness.
I would love to have seen Jonathan Winters play Granny Goodness. Well, Granny wants to know how you're doing.
I would like to see
Don't be distraught, Darkseid. We'll get them yet.
I would like to
when
see
when I get my hands on that Scott damn Free, it. I will damn ring it. Him one way to another.
God
I don't know what the
it.
Hell that means.
God damn it. I would like to see that comedy group do an entire superhero movie. Tim Conway's oh my God! Can
yeah, pretty much
imagine?
your 70s comedic actors,
right?
Like conjured back up from the dead, those who've passed,
and just let them go crazy.
Yeah,
but yeah, no, you're.
But I think that this is a wonderful springboard to give you a greater Marvel universe, and as you work your way into a Defenders, it allows you number one to introduce more characters, ideally. Even if it's just one-offs, you know, I'd like to see the Gargoyle fleshed out. I'd like to see even Devil Slayer get fleshed out in some way, because it's a tremendous treat when, like, Angar the Screamer, for God's sake, winds up on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and nobody, I mean, I looked over Kathy, I'm like, Angar the Screamer! She's like, mm-hmm.
She's like, what?
It's nice, dear. Angar the Screamer. It sure. But, you know, the thing about it is, that is a treat. That's the sort of, you know, give the fanboys something they can hang their fanboy hat on that was so lacking in the superhero. That's where, you know, Sony and Fox miss out in a big, big way.
Right.
I take that back. Fox had a playful sense of that.
Yeah.
In the X-Men franchise.
Mm-hmm. Kind of, but they did it poorly.
Yeah, they just sort of, you know, pussyfooted around it without actually committing. And, you know, these are the things that you don't have to know. There was a guy who dressed up like a refugee from Hair or Godspell and could yell real loud, but maybe not as loud as Black Bolt.
Right.
Called Angar the Screamer. To have a character simply called somebody Angar, you know, yelling people to sleep on the football field.
Which was a great scene, by the way.
Yeah, but it works even if you don't know that there was ever an Angar the Screamer. And I dearly hope there are people listening to the show like, what the hell? Angar the Screamer?
Like, that was a thing?
And
like,
they go look it up, and then they'll see the costume. They're like, my God, he is a refugee from Godspell.
He really is.
I think he played the Thomas, the character based on St. Thomas. But, anyway. Like that's the extent of what I know of Godspell. I've seen it performed, and I couldn't tell you who
anybody was, right?
Yeah. But you know, when you allow these things to happen, which to Warner's detriment, they're not doing. They have adamantly said we're not touching that.
Yeah.
Yet at the same time, they are brilliantly creating a television universe that can exist independently of the cinematic universe. And in many ways, that's a plus. Because if The Flash, Green Arrow, etc., are cast by whomever and are not the same Flash, Green Arrow, Atom, etc.,
right,
in a Justice League franchise, independent of that franchise, these same characters can thrive and literally build their own separate television Justice League. And tell entirely different stories, and they're not shackled to the cinematic universe.
Right.
There's only so much Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. will ever be able to do without stepping on the toes of the cinematic universe. Then it becomes like the Marvel Star Wars comics, where, you know, between Star Wars and Empire, or between Empire and Jedi, the number of restrictions practically killed any creativity, and the story suffered.
Right.
Because they weren't allowed to do so many things because Empire left a lot hanging. So, you know, there's sort of it's kind of a double-edged sword in that synergy there, but I would hope sincerely that the Netflix-based shows are allowed into that playground because they further help establish concepts, characters,
well,
everything.
I mean, imagine just springboarding off of what you were talking about, right? There are so many licenses that are out there for these characters that you can use that need either a touch-up or a revamp or a reintroduction. They've shown us that they're not scared, like you said, with S.H.I.E.L.D., and to take it a little further, they've shown us that they're not scared to take characters from the movies, put them in the shows, and vice versa. Because we've had Coulson in both, we've now had Sith in both.
Yeah. Yeah, the fact that they brought Sif in, the fact that Nick Fury has made a couple of cameos just blew me out of my chair the first time, especially.
Right. And so what you can do with this, and because it's Netflix, and because it's not TV restricted, because that's the thing, it's not TV restricted. Now, the only problem you're going to have is the actual delivery, because they film it and then release it all at once. You know, there's not an episode by episode. So it's really hard, unless you drop the next season the day before the movie comes out, or a week before the movie comes out, to get people amped. But you can introduce a new actor as the Punisher, or you can take mm-hmm. the Daredevil from the show and put him in a movie. If you're going to do Civil War, great.
Yes.
You now have a ready-made world to take every character out of and give them a cameo in that movie. You know, being courted to.
Find out what is Daredevil, Nick, Luke Cage, what is Iron Fist, what are these guys, what side are they on?
Right. You can talk about the AKA, you know, your Jessica Jones, Luke Cage dynamic. You know, is there any kind of conflict there because of Civil War? You know, you've got all these things. You can introduce every villain imaginable, every Stilt Man if you wanted. Throw Stilt Man, the Owl. God, I hope we get the Owl.
Oh, God, Leland Owlsley.
Yeah. You know, any of these characters, Bullseye, you can reinvent Bullseye where it's not Colin Farrell taking Nick Cage pills like it was in the movie. You can, you know, and all of a sudden you have this ready-made petri dish to try this stuff out on, which right now you only have on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and you have it in a very limited capacity.
Yes.
Because, and much like we were talking about on the show earlier, to tie it back, look at what I'm doing. This is how pseudo-professionals work. You can explore.
This is what I call the professional. I've decided my other, in addition to Z-list celebrity, I'm now going to call myself a professional amateur.
Yes, right. But this is so what they did in the S.H.I.E.L.D. world, they've kind of tied that to the Avengers. You know, they've kind of given you the Avengers S.H.I.E.L.D. Package. Well, now you have this Defenders world, much like the comic books, where you can explore new talent and introduce new characters in this petri dish that you can get adjusted to, see who plays and who doesn't, and then introduce them into the larger Marvel Cinematic Universe, which I think is amazing. So kudos to them for that, for not being scared to, unlike DC, and casting a new Green Arrow and Flash in the movies, which is ridiculous. It's just ridiculous that they would that is something that they would do. It drives me absolutely crazy.
But at the same time, like I said, by separating those two universes, in many ways, it's as liberating as it is limiting.
It is.
Because it does allow that television universe to be its own universe and get to the point where, you know, it could even develop its own Justice League.
Right. And I don't know how I feel about that. I really don't.
I feel the same way, because it does sort of become that two-edged sword that I was talking about, because you don't know which way you want to approach that.
But yes, we are getting a Defenders TV show after the four shows individually drop, and Laura only knows what they're going to introduce, because I've heard names bandied about. You know, I've heard that Moon Knight might make an appearance as a test the waters run for their next kind of wave of street level superhero shows. You know, I've heard a lot of names being bandied about in that respect. I've heard a relaunch of Blade possibly, which would be super cool if they could do it right. I was a fan of the Blade movies personally. I think that Guillermo del Toro's second Blade movie was one of the best superhero movies that's ever been made, because it's insane, and Ron Perlman and Norman Reedus are in it, so suck it. But you know, so that's, I think that's about it for a Defenders show.
I think we've done more than justice to the Defenders.
I think so.
Often overlooked. I mean, you have this group that has a tremendous history and a tremendous volume of characters in that history, yet it's almost completely unknown.
Right.
You know, it's probably the most famous unknown title in the Marvel pantheon outside of Trouble.
It is. It is.
I just wanted to bring up the Trouble miniseries.
We don't need to talk about Trouble. We don't need to. Did you notice? I think I actually blacked out when you said it. I think I just like went dark for a second. I was like, what? Oh, where am I? When did I get in this Bacta tank? Alright, let's close this show up.
Because you can't all the Bacta in the universe is going to wash.
Can't wash away. I need a Purell bath. Marville. God, why are they doing a Marville world? You've seen that, right?
We have Trouble World as well, because I guess at this point, why not?
Why not? They've got the only one that, there's a few worlds that I'm super excited about in the upcoming Secret Wars Battle World thing, and one of them is New Quack City, which is the Howard the Duck world. I'm really excited about New Quack City, I'm super excited.
I'm on board with that.
I'm super excited about the '90s X-Men thing, just because it's a train wreck. Like they're giving a whole thing to the '90s X-Men, which is a total train wreck. But they have a world dedicated. One of their battle worlds is dedicated to Marville. I don't know why. Like that one baffles me.
Is there anything there at all?
Right? Like, are you trying to just rip open old wounds? Are you admitting fault? Is that what you're doing now? Is this AA for Marvel? Like, are they coming back as a part of a 12-step program and have to admit what they've done to the people that they care about? Is that what's happening? Because it feels like that's what's happening. All right, let's plug it up. Let's plug it up.
Yes, indeed. We are, of course, coming to you through the auspices and bandwidth and whatever else we have at the Jedi Cole Universe at JediCole.com. You can write to us, and we hope you will, because we are actually hoping to get some people to write us and ask us some questions, comic-related questions, in any genre or format or whatever, be it characters, be it cinematic, television, comic books, what have you. Because we do want to do here a little later in the year a Hey Kids Comics Presents, because we haven't done that in a long time. So please write us, ask us your questions, and if we, or just tell us stuff, that you'd like us to talk about, what have you. At jcumail@yahoo.com, that's where I was going with that, is to tell you where to write. And you can look for the occasional various tweets from our Twitter account, which is @TheJediColeU. You can look for Andy and myself usually the second Saturday of every month at deepelemonair.com on show this is, Hey Kids Comics Live, where we have a live feed show out of the Deep Elm Studios in Dallas, Texas. Generally the second Saturday of every month. Looking at some of the upcoming months, we may be bumping to the third Saturday a couple of times due to other constraints,
right?
Like we had to in March for AllCon. I think April's going to hit the mark, but May, I believe, is going to be off a bit. So basically, those are some of the best places to find us. In mentioning AllCon, the Jedi Cole Universe is actually going to have a fairly significant presence at a lot of conventions and such.
Yeah, we are.
We are going to be at a Galaxy Call Dallas in Garland on, I believe, May 2nd for
May
Free
2nd.
Comic Book Day.
Absolutely.
The Jedi Cole Universe will be out there in force. We will be at, there's a convention coming up in Louisville, Texas in June.
Nice. Yeah,
have been goodly enough to provide us with a 10x10 booth.
The Jedi Cole Universe is sort of like the Wu-Tang Clan. There's like 80 of us. We all have weird names. We just show up and drop like three lines on the track and then leave. Like eight bars, and then we just drop a mic and leave.
So that is going to be June 13th in Louisville, Texas, at Texas Comic Fest. And we are just absolutely thrilled to be a part of that. They are still finalizing their website, but you can find Texas Comic Fest on Facebook. And you can also find them on the in the June listings on Convention Awareness Project Texas at cap-tx.info, where you can find them and some of the what is looking very much like we're going to have at least 100 conventions in Texas this year.
Insane.
Between the ones that have happened up to this point, including this very starting today as you listen to this, or even before today as you listen to this, AggieCon 46, the oldest convention in Texas.
Man.
March 26th to the 29th, 46 years. They are rapidly approaching the old man brain mark.
They're going to get their AARP card soon if they're not careful.
TexanCon, 2015 TexanCon is back in Stephenville, Texas, a college town that had never had a convention before. These guys did that. I really ought to, if I had any time in my day this coming weekend, I would reach out to them and try to get a presence up. Texas Pinball, 2014 in Frisco, Texas. Those are three conventions this very weekend. And you can check out all of that at Convention Awareness Project Texas. Click on the name of all the cons, go to their websites, find out more information. But I am beside myself because I think there will be at least 100 conventions in 2015 in Texas. That is unprecedented.
That's huge. That's amazing.
And despite what some naysayers have said, no, there actually do need to be lots and lots of conventions. The more the merrier. We don't need fewer.
Right. And if you're
just need better.
And if you're out there listening, because I'm going to be doing this on every show, in late February in Lubbock, they're having their first ever LubbockCon. And it's a content-driven convention. Think the all-con of the West, I guess, would be a weird way of putting it. They're really trying to put on a convention for the people. It's not going to be a celebrity-con like so many of them have become. It's not a corporate
thing.
Or an Insta-con. Yeah, they're buckling down, volunteers, doing the work, putting in the time. And it's going to be
amazing. What I want to say that I love about this convention
is
you have someone who posed the question, where are the conventions in this area? And when confronted with, well, there's no such thing, not only said, well, there ought to be, but is making that happen. And I wish it was this year.
Yeah, I know, right?
It's part of that 100-plus that it looks like we're barreling up on, but it's going to be part of the 100-plus that I foresee in 2016, and we cannot wait. This is going to be amazing.
But the thing about LubbockCon is, I'm glad it's not this year because they're taking the time. Well, and
yes,
they're taking the time to do it right. They're taking the time to set down, do it right.
Not only are they taking the time to do that, but they are they're already promoting now.
Right.
And you know, in the Convention Awareness Project Texas, this is our third year. I should say my third year because I'm the only one who bothers with it. But in fact, that's not even entirely true. There are a legion of people who say, oh, hey, by the way, Cole, here's this that you didn't know about or it's not on your site yet. And that I always tell people, please tell me. I don't want to miss any.
Right.
But one of the things that bothers me is to the point where I finally, on a different Facebook page for conventions, put out an impassioned plea and said, hey, comic or convention promoters, here's an idea. Promote your convention. Because it amazes me how many conventions I miss at least one or two a year to get them on the site before they happen. Because I don't stumble on them until after they're over. And most people wouldn't know half the conventions I list are even happening. And I've had so many people say thank you because I didn't know there was a convention in my town ever. And apparently this is their third year. And oftentimes these are in small towns or smaller towns, not in the major metropolitan areas.
Right.
And even in that kind of environment, the word's not getting spread.
Exactly.
And you know, the thing I would tell people is support your local conventions, support conventions in general, because your ticket ensures they come back next year.
Right.
And they get bigger and better. And number two, check out the website. If I missed anything, please, for the love of God, contact me at jcumail@yahoo.com. Say, hey, you missed this one. It's coming up. Because I don't want to miss it. Most of the promoters of these shows have no idea I'm even doing this for them, which is a real shame as well.
You know, I had a really interesting conversation today with three librarians and about what they do
It sounded like an independent film as well. Something you'd see on, like, IFC. I had really
interesting conversations with three librarians about what they do, you know, and they you look at your libraries. Look at these places, because what these libraries are doing is trying to create outreach programs for fans of comic books, for fans of different fandom, for fans of cosplay, for fans of costuming, and they're putting on little conventions. We were talking today about a little literary convention every year. That's one day, you know, and this is in Coppell, Texas, but it's one day. If you know of anything like that, get it to a Convention Awareness Project. That's a convention.
Absolutely.
That needs to
in
be on
eyes,
there.
The only thing I will not list, because someone had actually posed this question, I had not thought about it.
Is my one-man show.
Well, that too. But someone asked about Scarborough Renaissance Fair in Waxahachie, and I said, I consider that more an event than a convention. Because it's like runs for like 2.5 months, and it's a Renaissance fair. And if I start doing one Renaissance fair, then I have to go and track down the other 9 or 12 or 15 that happened in the state. And if I miss anybody, like I told this guy, I said, those people get medieval on you.
Nice. All right. On the medieval note, we're going to close this thing up.
Indeed.
Join us next week for another exciting, fun-filled edition of Hey Kids Comics. Thank you all for listening. Thank you for everything. If you came out to AllCon and you supported the Jedi Cole universe and you supported Games in Theory, thank you, thank you. We are all in doubling down next year for what
we're
bringing
into this party. Yeah, and for like the 5 people who attended Accidental Podcaster, God bless you.
It was a good show. You didn't know what you missed. You didn't know what you missed if you didn't come. It was good. And again, content-driven panels, if there's something you want to talk about, if you have a voice and you want it to be heard, get in there at places like AllCon. Get in there at places like LubbockCon. Look for your volunteer forms. Go to the websites. Go to Convention Awareness Project. Find out what you can do to make your voice heard and get out there and be a part of this community. We want you in our community. We want you to be a part of it. So be that part of it. Be a beacon for whatever you love, and we will love it too. So
see the ball, be the ball, Danny.
There is no spoon. If you make it, they will come.
There are 4 lights.
We're gonna need a bigger boat. Is there anything I'm missing?
The list goes on.
All right. Good night. Say good night, Cole.
Good night.
Good night, everybody. Good night.
I fly a starship across the universe divide, and when I reach the other side, I'll find a place to rest my spirit if I can. Perhaps I may become a highwayman again, or I may simply be a single drop of rain. But I will remain, and I'll be back again and again and again.